Chapter 27. The March. From his perch up in the trees, Bidi gazed upon those that took the noble form of the great master. They were humans, like the great healing sage, but just as the hawk stole his form, they stole his great master's. They took no notice of him as he observed their movements. He was tempted to fly down and offer them a greeting, but something stayed his wings. Experience, that harsh teacher, had taught him both the folly of trusting too easily and acting too rashly. These beings did not act as they should. Their clothes were tattered, their eyes were hard and full of foul intent. They slunk like the black furs did, like Chowji had. Bidi could not make his decision yet, so he simply observed. He watched them closely as they sniffed around what was the great master's domain. It had been another great day. Who doesn't enjoy going tobogganing with friends? Hell, it was better than the ski resort I'd been to, mostly because I could just run up the hill faster than a lift. Eventually, Mei Mei and Yun Zhen got so tired they didn't want to walk up anymore, so I just pulled them up. I was training my dadding abilities, 100 reps of pull the kids to the top. Our lunch that day had been some Japanese-styled fare in the form of onigiri filled with fish. I didn't have any seaweed, so I'd ended up using the green part of a leek. It wasn't the right flavor, but it was still pretty good. They were grilled over a quick fire to char the rice a little bit and heat them up on the still cold day. Chunky and Peppa got their share of rice and veggies. But all good things come to an end. It was starting to get late again, so we decided to pack up for the day instead of doing more nighttime sledding. Mei Mei and Yun Zhen were pretty tuckered out. Gojen and Chunky, however, had to be coaxed back to the house. They were still bright-eyed and raring to go, even after hours of running around, but I managed to corral them eventually, and we set off for home. My only regret was that there was no hot chocolate. It was the one damper on the otherwise perfect day. I swear, though, I'll find a cocoa tree somewhere. Maple trees exist, so I assume I can probably find cocoa pods. Considering they were considered medicinal and a bit of an aphrodisiac, the chances of finding them in Xianxia land were pretty high. And then I shall have hot chocolate, I thought, a smile on my face. Peppa and Chunky hooked themselves back into my sleigh, and we began the trek back home. My sleigh was coming along nicely. I definitely still needed some good jingle bells, and probably a horse, but Chunky and Peppa seemed to like the whole thing. Now all I needed was some antlers, and they'd be like Max from The Grinch. Soon, Santa would descend on Hongyao-Wuville and bring gifts for all the good boys and girls. Sure, none of the religious reasons existed, but I'd always held a sentimental attachment to what the holiday had come to mean. It was the same reasons people here celebrated, mostly family, friends, and an excuse to party. I hoped this would be the kids' first taste of gingerbread, too. China probably has something like it, but I couldn't tell you. I was still planning for my great Christmas caper when we got back to the house. There was nobody else around, with Big D and Tigger off somewhere. I fed my pigs their dinner, then started thinking about some other important questions like, what was for our dinner? Any votes on what to eat tonight? I asked. The Song brothers looked at each other and nodded.
Let us make you food tonight, Jin,
Yun Zhen said with a smile. I have to admit, it was pretty cool to see them make hand-pulled noodles. They were fast. Considering they also brought some chili oil and salted beef, I knew it was going to be a great dinner. I eyed my small stockpile of spirit herbs. These would be the last until the shoots matured in a month or two. But to hell with it. This was a meal that deserved the extra oomph. They somehow found their way onto the cutting board and into the noodles. Dinner was delicious, if a bit more oily than I was used to. The extra zest was noticeable. Gojen sighed contentedly after we finished eating.
Things always taste so much better when we're here, he mused to himself.
This got nods from Mei Mei and Yun Zhen.
Huh, really?
I personally thought that the food at Hongyao Wu was delicious, but that might just be the fact that it was Mei Mei's cooking most of the time. She's good. Real good. I collected the dishes and went to wash them up. Sure enough, the carp was ready and waiting for me. I was a little worried about how the oil would affect the fish, but he had eaten some to no ill effect before, so it was probably fine. If anything, he seemed to suck on the plates even harder.
gluttonous little thing. When I got back to the living room, Mei Mei had my pipa out.
Could you play like you played for me?
She asked with a hopeful smile. This is how I knew Mei Mei was absolutely superior to all other women. She liked John Denver. The man grinned as he heard the stomping feet and laughter coming from the farmhouse. Yes, these people were going to be ripe for the taking. Their guards were down, and judging by the house, they were absolutely loaded. Rich enough to build that monstrosity made out of snow. He felt a surge of vindictive pleasure at the thought of tearing it down. These bastards were living large, while he had been running for his life. And if he wasn't mistaken, he could hear a woman's laughter mixed with the men's. This was just too perfect. It had been so long since he had a woman. He turned, going to report to the boss, but then paused. There was a rooster in the snow in front of him. It was quite the vibrant thing, and he could see its thick, surely juicy thighs. It cocked its head to the side and stared at him in the creepy way every chicken stared at people. His stomach growled. He hadn't eaten much today. Nobody would notice the chicken disappearing. The damn bird had probably eaten better than he had recently. Grinning, he reached out for its neck to wring it. His fist closed around the rooster's throat and squeezed. And squeezed some more. The rooster looked spectacularly unimpressed. The man was confused. He didn't seem to be doing anything to the bird. He went to pick it up. The chicken reached out with his beak and bit down on the offending arm. Its head jerked, and the man's arm was plucked from his body. The man gaped stupidly at the stump where his arm once was. The pain hit. He opened his mouth to start screaming. The man's head hit the snowy ground with a dull thud. The rooster retracted his outstretched wing. No blood had stained him, and this filth had been unworthy of his spurs. His suspicions were confirmed. Those that sent scouts ahead to slink in the shadows and offer no respect to the great master's pillars were interlopers. And interlopers had no place in Great Pharam. He called the disciples. From the trees, a stripy orange cat descended, walking behind and to his right. She prowled with unnatural grace, her footsteps not damaging a single snowflake and leaving no footprints behind her. She eyed the rooster with disdain, annoyed that he dared to command her, but she obeyed nonetheless. A large boar emerged from the gloom. His face was battle-scarred. In contrast to the cat, the snow parted as if fleeing before his unstoppable might. It vacated his presence, lest it be destroyed utterly. From the left, a second pig emerged. She was smaller than the first and moved with precision, stepping gently through the snow. She paused a moment, sniffing at the corpse, and then, with a single dainty bite, consumed it whole. She sneered with disgust, swallowing. Faint whips of cheese surrounded her mouth.
"The things I do for Pharam," she muttered, her voice prim and proper.
On her back, a nervous little rat sat. She wrung her paws and fidgeted, checking and rechecking her little satchels of herbs, ready to provide aid to her fellow disciples. But the little one's eyes were firm and focused. Her resolve was set. She would follow this path until the end. The rooster gazed over their forms and was glad. He bowed in respect for the other's resolve. The cat sneered, the rat took a bracing breath, the pig raised an eyebrow, the boar oinked happily. They were prepared. Bidi, the first disciple of Great Pharam, turned his gaze to where the interlopers gathered. With great dignity, the rooster began his march. Each stride was regal, yet humble. His stature was kingly, and yet not tyrannical. His presence was as bright as the moon, his intent deep as the darkest night. Behind him, the might of Pharam followed.